Welcome to the Prac Ready podcast, Clinical Education in One Coffee. My name's Matt Cooper and today I'm joined by Craig Taylor. Morning, Craig.
Morning, Matt.
Craig, today we're going to talk about that when to refer time. So basically, as a new practitioner, you're going to have moments where things seem a little bit out of the blue and you're not sure what to do and what to look for and when to refer. And so Craig and I have both had experiences with this, and I think the one thing that university does do quite well for you, Craig, is that you'll come out and things just mightn't fit what you think it should be. You know, you've got a good database of common conditions and understandings of how injuries should react, and you take from your patient's history that, you know, it may not fit, and that might be a time where you're thinking, okay, I need to refer this.
Yeah, we have all had times where a relatively straightforward injury has presented in a complex manner. Yet, usually with your history taking, you can pick up those sinister points where you think, okay, this is complex in terms of what the patient's telling me, but there's nothing in that complex history that makes me particularly concerned. Or there's other times where you're taking a relatively straightforward history, but they might say one or two little things that make you sort of think laterally and think, right, we've got to follow that path because that doesn't make sense with what they're presenting.
Yeah, no, exactly right, exactly right. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you come out, and I know we certainly went through this at uni, you know, this idea of like a diagnostic sieve, you know, you work out your layers. And I think I still formulate my diagnoses with that in mind. And the first thing I'm thinking, is this dangerous? You know, is this going to be a threat to the patient's general health? Could it be life-threatening? And there have been situations where, you know, I haven't been comfortable literally straight off the bat from what patients have said. You know, and common things that I've seen, you know, I've had a couple of patients who have had, you know, cardiac issues in and attended the clinic with shoulder and jaw pain, you know, on that left-hand side. And it was really obvious to me straight away, and they thought it was a musculoskeletal complaint, and both of them sort of fit the model that you're looking for, you know, and you know, I had to refer them straight away, and even in one case, which was in the student clinic, we called an ambulance straight away, which was quite confronting, but I was really happy with that experience to get that out of the way, I guess, for lack of a better term, pretty early on in the piece.
Yeah, and I think that if you feel that someone's presenting with that classic medical emergency, so really looking at cardiac or stroke type patients, don't hesitate to call an ambulance too. We know that in these sort of scenarios that the timing is of the essence, and all of you going through your final years of study are probably refreshing your first aid at this point in time. As much as the first aid courses can sometimes drag a little bit for health professionals, the really key points around the symptoms of presenting emergency or casualty are really quite solid. And if you see those symptoms pop up in your list, just ring the ambulance. You're much better to have a couple of people, unfortunately, go through the inconvenience of going to the hospital than to send someone on their way. Or I even feel quite uncomfortable sending someone who I think is somewhat concerning home, like to go to the hospital on their own in the car, or especially if they're on their own. But it's just easy to call an ambulance and have it dealt with. And I mean, the ambulance will come, and if they don't think the patient's a high enough priority, that'll say, no, this is what we think, you know, and they'll advise the patient there. That's their job. Like, it's not really our scope of practice to make that decision.
Yeah. And it is. You've really got to mitigate that risk, you know, and really the worst thing that's going to happen in that situation, if you get it wrong, is that you've inconvenienced someone, you know, and at the end of the day, their health is your priority. So it doesn't particularly matter, you know, in the cold light of day. And realistically, you know, if it's their neck and shoulder, well, you know, you can treat that tomorrow, you know, whereas if it's their heart, well, they mightn't be here tomorrow. And so you've just got to be really, really, really sure about those sorts of things.
Matt, to cut you off, I'm going to put one more in that list of acute kind of presentations is also head knocks and concussion. We know that the slow bleeds can often present with the sore neck following the head injury, and if that's it, sort of in the, you know, the 24 hours preceding, don't hesitate to send those patients off as well.
Yep, and particularly if you know, in your final year, and we see this a lot in the osteo program, the physio programs as well. You know, a lot of you will be working at footy clubs and different sporting teams where concussion can happen. You know, every training session, every game. So, you know, I think when there is doubt there, and particularly around concussion, you've got to take that very seriously. You know, our attitudes have certainly changed on concussion a lot in the recent history. And so that is being treated more and more as a medical sort of emergency. And rightly so, in my opinion, you know, because our understanding around concussion still isn't that great. And it is really important, you, as a sports trainer or whatever else, at a local footy club, you do have that duty of care to that player.
And you will see over the next few years that the protocols around treating a concussion, even a relatively mild one, will be more stringent in regards to reducing stimuli on the patient. Things like mobile phones, going to work, even the following few days, even after a mild concussion, can be detrimental to their recovery. So you watch this space in that regard.
Yes, yeah. And look, I've, experienced for mine, and I know we're talking about concussion just quickly here, but, working at an elite sporting club, you would see players go downhill quite rapidly, and it would surprise you in some cases, and little tells might be, I won't remember one particular player. He kept asking me the score, and it didn't click to me initially. Like, why, the score's on the scoreboard there. Have a look, And I'd come back out to him, and he'd ask me again, and I just remember saying to him, "Where are we?" And he made a comment, like, I think he said, "Oh, we're at Etihad Stadium, and we're playing a game down in Williamstown," or something like that. And it was completely wrong, and there was no obvious knock to him or whatever, but it happened innocuously throughout the game, and he went downhill quite quickly. So you've just got to be aware of that, and particularly if you're in charge, as a sports trainer, and you're one or maybe two of you in charge of 22 players in the football sense, you've just got to have those conversations during the breaks, real quick, how are you going, little things, and try and work out those little tells.
So I guess we've chatted about when you've got an emergency type situation or a relatively severe type situation that needs immediate attention. I guess now we can have a look at when do you refer for a sub-clinical thing. Yeah. So something where either might not necessarily be on the first appointment, but something where we think our treatment isn't the right treatment for this person.
Yeah, exactly right. And what I find with the way I treat is, when I've applied an intervention, there should be a change, okay? Now, that change may be for the better, it may be for the worse, but we should see a change. My ears sort of prick up a little bit when, after a treatment, the patient will say something like, "Oh, look, it feels the same," or, "Okay, it's not really, it hasn't really changed, the presentation hasn't really changed." Now, I might feel that it's moving a little bit better, or that the tension in the tissues have changed, or something along those lines. We see the patient again in a few days, and they've come back in with really no change to symptoms at all. And that happens intermittently. And so I then start thinking, okay, there might be something going on different in this situation. And so I guess that comes back to trying to have that really good relationship within your network, with local practitioners, the local GP where I practice as GP around the corner, which we have a very good relationship with, who can refer for those further investigations. Or if it's within your scope of practice, you might be thinking, do I need to scan this? Do I need to, do I need to get an ultrasound or a CT or something along those lines to check if there's something more sinister?
Yeah. And using the referral to another health practitioner can be a really, very good way of marketing yourself as well. So, especially in the early days of your treating life, it can be a really nice way to start to introduce yourself to people or different health professionals in your area. And that can come back to the way you word your letter. So looking at obviously having something succinct where the person reading your referral doesn't have to have a full two-page discovery of the patient's ins and outs. I like to use a bit of an introduction and then some bullet points around the pernia symptoms, and then a sign-off line or two. But the key part about it is, especially if you're a bit umming and ahhing about why you're, or the specific referral, is just explain, you know, there's something that I don't feel comfortable about with the way that this presentation is. And it's okay to be vulnerable in those in those letters, rather than having to, you know, nail the referral every time. I mean, conversely, if you've got a patient who's come in and you think it's their ACL, like, just say that. Like, say, you know, I believe this is an ACL injury and this is why. But it's a good way for the local health professionals to be able to say, okay, well, Matt's happy to refer, especially when he doesn't feel comfortable with the patient's symptoms. And that will usually endear you to those people.
Yeah, and it's a really great point, Craig. So let's move on from there a little bit. Have you got any sort of stories in your time where, you know, you might have maybe missed something a little bit early, and, you know, wished you referred off earlier?
I'm trying to think off the top. There's a couple of times where probably could have acted sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I've got actually relatively recently a patient who presented with, she's 50 odd. Overall, her health is actually quite good. And she presented with these recurrent episodes of joint pain, in particular elbows and fingers. And sometimes it was bilateral, sometimes it was unilateral. But most of the time, there was no real outstanding cause. And probably saw this lady over the period of maybe 6 months with this sort of recurrent symptoms. I had seen her previous to that too, so we already had a relationship, and I think that clouded my judgment somewhat, because previously she had responded really well to treatment, so there wasn't the urgency that I maybe would have had if she'd come in as a brand new patient. Anyway, after maybe 4 to 5 months of this happening, I thought to myself, it's just not responding in the normal time frames that I would expect. And knowing your physiology around injury recoveries, and then with a good history being able to say, okay, well, you know, has the patient been adherent to any rehab protocols we've been doing, yes or no? If they're not then hitting those time frames and there's no good explanation as to why they're not, that's a good time to start thinking, okay, this is a referral case. And that's exactly what happened with this one. I sent off to the via a GP to a rheumatologist, and it turned out, yeah, she did have she was having, you know, these mildish type RA attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, retrospective, I look back at the notes even from the first time I saw her for this onset, and I think, oh, geez, how did I not see that? But the important thing was that we were able to get her there at the end. And yes, it was maybe 4 months later than we would have liked, but we've got that treatment protocol in now, and you know, she's made, you know, she's still a very, you know, happy patient to come in and see me for things that she needs to. And it's just being open and honest about it and saying, look, maybe we should have done this a couple of months ago. I just didn't think that was the case, and it was in the list of things, but it was, you know, quite far down the bottom. And patients appreciate that honesty.
Yeah. I certainly recall one really vividly, a youngish, late 20s, early 30s fella who, he'd come off his bike, and this was sort of a big eye-opener for me. You know, he'd had an x-ray done pretty much straight away, and he'd had sort of really stiff mid-thoracic pain. And, you know, I said, how'd you do it? And he sort of was doing a mono and literally fell flat on his back. And I thought, okay. And he said, knock the wind out of me and whatever else. And it was a really poorly done x-ray. And I spotted the x-ray, but it was really poorly done. It was over...
Exposed.
And so we basically... I treated him... and it freed up quite a bit, and like I didn't manipulate him, but I did a lot of soft tissue work, mobilization, articulation through his thoracics, and he had good relief from it. But I saw him a bit later in that week, and it was really noticeable that it came back and he'd stiffened up incredibly strong then again. Treated him again, and he had a really good response once again. And I said, look, I'm going to call you tomorrow because I just want to see how you wake up in the morning. And so anyway, I called him and he said, look, I was great the rest of the day, but once again, overnight, I've stiffened up a lot. And so I thought, oh, golly, all right, I better, that x-ray wasn't great. Let's get you scanned again. And so we sent him off for a thoracics x-ray, and it turned out he had a crust fracture in his mid-thoracics. And it obviously there was a timing thing with the initial x-ray pretty much being immediate after the first, and it was clearly overexposed. And he was actually really thankful for it because he thought I was helping in returns. He was getting good relief from the treatment. And I was really glad that I didn't try and manipulate it because it just didn't feel right to me. I'd manipulate a lot lower and a bit higher, but hadn't directly manipulated that area. And he was, with that sort of area, they couldn't do a lot anyway, that they weren't going to put him in a splint or anything like that. But it turned out I ended up seeing him probably 6 or 7 weeks after that, once healing had pretty much commenced and whatever else, and we're able to get him moving a lot quicker. But it was really interesting. His priority was just to get back to playing golf, and it just shows you, A, don't necessarily believe what you see in a scan, but the other thing is don't necessarily believe what the patient has told you 100%, especially if they've seen other practitioners as well, where they may not have had those investigations, but they've been told something. It's really important to take that step back and make your own clinical judgments from there.
Yeah, people are coming to you for your opinion, and especially if it's a follow-up or a second opinion of an injury, I actually ask them to not tell me what they've had told to them previously, because that can cloud your judgment going forward. And I usually approach that by saying, I would like to ask you about your previous appointments with other practitioners, but I'm going to do that after we've had a chat, mm-hmm. because it gives you that fresh set of that fresh lens, allows you to come up with your own solid diagnosis. And if it correlates with what the other ones are, then you're probably on a good path. And if it doesn't, well, why doesn't it?
Yeah. And look, Craig, I think that's a great place to finish that up there. Just look, really rest assured that you do come out of uni with some great skills to know if something doesn't fit. Okay, and like I was very nervous coming out thinking, oh, I don't know anything, but realistically you do have those building blocks. And you will get exposed to obviously a lot more patients in private practice, and that just builds on that.
Yeah, and I think just to ensure your patient communication is good, just before we do wrap up, it's also important that if you do refer someone off, follow up with them a couple of times, because like you said in the previous example, if they have a period of time where they are just in a healing phase, checking in, how are you going, cool, making sure that you're their point of contact for their rehab, is you've sent them there. You want to be the person that then helps them get back to their normal or better than their normal level. So it's also good to just know, well, did the referral I send out, was that accurate? Because sometimes patients, they get caught in that treatment cycle. They're getting something else treated. They're not necessarily going to feed back to you that you were correct even. Some really nice ones will, but others will. That's where I am now. You can't always even ensure that the person you referred them to is going to send back that information, because they might slip their mind, or the clinic might not have great processes in place or whatever. So just make sure you're following up with them too.
Brilliant. All right, thank you, Craig. Just a reminder that if you have any questions, please feel free to send them to prakready@gmail.com. That's one word, prakready@gmail.com. And if you appreciate what Craig and I are doing, feel free to hit that donate button and shout us a cup of coffee. We'd always much appreciate that. But we look forward to you listening. Please share with your friends and colleagues and spread the word that PrakReady is here to help for those first year practitioners moving from university into practice. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks, Matt.